Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Now You Know, talk radio where you get to ask the questions. Call us now at 877-NYK-RADIO. That's 877-695-7234. And now, Ann Mitchell.
Welcome back to Blog Talk Radio. This is the second half of our show, and we are talking with two women who have survived breast cancer, and they are going to talk to you about just about everything, what it's like to go through having breast cancer and the different types of things to which they've been exposed and what's gone on in their minds. Etc. But first, I just want to take a moment to do a sound check. Can you all hear me out there? We had an interesting glitch in trying to do a back-to-back show, and I'm very, very sorry about that, but it's something special that we have been doing, and so it's a first for us, and in fact, it turns out it may have been a first for Blog Talk Radio as well. So thank you very much. In any event, we have with us two breast cancer survivors. And as I said, they are going to talk to us about really what it's like to be on that journey. You know, for many of us, all we really think about anymore when we think about breast cancer, if we have not had a personal experience with it, is pink ribbons and races. And while those are wonderful things, and we certainly are grateful to these organizations that are raising so much money for breast cancer research, we think it almost sort of adds a gloss to the reality, to the nitty-gritty of going through having breast cancer. And so that's why we've asked these two women to come on as our guests, and we will bring them on in a minute. Let me just tell you a little bit about them. Our first guest is Jennifer Jones, and she is a mother of four children. And as she says, she kind of figured that she wasn't really ever going to have to worry about breast cancer. She breastfed all of them, and it's the conventional wisdom is that nursing your children helps to immunize you, if you will, against breast cancer, and wasn't something that was on her radar at all for any reason. And then, lo and behold, one day, all of a sudden, she found that lump, and it was really just out of the blue. And so she is here with us. And then our other guest is Jamie Highslope, and I hope I'm saying her name right. And Jamie, if not, please correct me as soon as I bring you on. And she first learned that she had an aggressive stage 4 breast cancer that had already spread to her liver and lungs a little over 2 years ago. And she was giving a very short prognosis, I believe about 6 months. And so happily she has already outlasted that, but she has been through a huge number of treatments and she's now in remission. And again, these two women are going to talk to you about the nitty-gritty, what it's really like. And it may be shocking at times. It may make you uncomfortable, but I think ultimately it will make you grateful and you'll be deeply moved. And it will help you to understand what any friends and family you may have who are going through this or who have gone through it or, God forbid, may still have yet to go through it. It will really help you to understand the reality of what this is about. And so I am going to bring Jennifer on first, simply because she's the first in the queue. Jamie, hang on there, because we will bring you on very shortly thereafter. But first of all, Jennifer, are you there? Hello, Jennifer? Let me try this again. Jennifer, are you there?
Yes. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Jennifer. Welcome to Monday Night Radio. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, I have to, in the spirit of full disclosure, which we learned in our first segment is a very important thing to do, I do have to disclose that you are not only local to me, but you are a friend. And so I very much appreciate you coming on and doing this show. And And well, that's pretty much what I have to say about that. Do you want to give us just a little bit of background about your own situation, just for a couple of minutes, because we want to get Jamie on here too, and we want to let people ask questions. But can you just sort of tell us a little bit about your background and your opening thoughts?
Sure. Like you said in the introduction, I really never thought that I would have to encounter breast cancer in my life. I did have a couple of aunts that had it, but they were on my father's side, so I thought that that wasn't a factor, although I've learned that indeed it is. Heredity can be passed on through the mother or the father's side. And like you said, I did breastfeed my children. I started having babies when I was 25. I really didn't have it on my radar screen. And then one day I just slipped off my bra and felt a pretty big lump near my armpit, and I thought, oh my gosh, how did I miss that? And well, then the journey began there.
Okay. Well, let's bring Jamie in. Let's see where she is. Oops, sorry about that, Jamie. Jamie, are you there?
I am.
Oh, Jamie, thank you so much for joining us. I know it was a little bit last minute, or at least it seemed that way on our end, and so I'm very grateful to your joining us. And would you like to give us a little? Oh, our pleasure. Please, do you want to give us a little bit of background? You heard what Jen had to say, and just sort of set the stage for our listeners.
Oh, sure. In July of 2008, I was wrestling on the floor with my nephew and found a lump in my right breast. When I was roughly the size of a grape, I didn't think I had anything to worry about. Even my primary care physician assumed it was nothing, maybe a swollen duct. Started me on a heavy dose of antibiotics, and 10 days later it was still there, still growing. I ended up going through a mammogram and an ultrasound straight over to a surgeon, and 3 weeks later from the date that I found the lump, it had grown from the size of a grape to the size of a tennis ball. So it was immediately in, have the lump removed. The surgeon came out, told my family, nothing to worry about, this is not cancer. The reports came back a couple days later that it was definitely cancer, so they had to go back in and do a mastectomy. I started on chemo right away. After 6 months of chemo, we found out 2 days after Christmas that the cancer had metastasized to both my lungs and my liver. At that point, I had 36 tumors in my lungs and a softball-sized mass growing on my liver with several smaller nodes scattering around it. And my oncologist basically handed me a prescription for pain medicine and said, you have 6 months to a year, but I can keep you comfortable. And there began my journey with the Cancer Treatment Centers of America. And Sunday, I just celebrated 8.5 months in remission.
Well, congratulations. Now, what both of you seem to have in common, and correct me if I'm wrong, and, you know, I will tell you right now, I am very ignorant about most of this process, but that's why we are doing this particular show, because many people are, and really only see what we see in the media. And it seems to me that both of you, Jennifer and Jamie, went kind of from 0 to 60 in a very short period of time, to nothing being there, to suddenly having just a really large lump. And is that what it was really like?
It seemed that way.
Jennifer,
for
how about you?
Well, yeah, the lump that I had actually, Annie, was benign. It was just what got me into the office. And when they were probing around in there with a needle biopsy, they found what's called LCIS, which is also a pretty benign condition. That LCIS stands for lobular carcinoma in situ. And that's just kind of an indicator that breast cancer is possible or very, it could be likely in the future. So in doing a needle biopsy on the benign tumor, they found a little bit of that LCIS. So then I was brought in for an MRI. And on the MRI, it showed what's called microcalcifications. and dense tissue, and that indicates breast cancer. So at that point, they did an actual removal of the whole site where the lump was and what was indicated on the MRI, and all that came back, and that it was cancer. So the lump that I had, it really did seem to appear overnight. I had no idea it was there. It was in a part of my kind of my underarm that is hard to find. If you're doing a breast exam, it really is important to raise up your arm and really feel up into the underarm area, because the breast tissue goes all the way up there and up to your collarbone.
Wow.
And what I found was, once there's anything abnormal on your mammogram, you're entered into a race. You're in the system, and the doctor's jobs, it's their mission is to keep you alive and or well or comfortable, and instantly you're entered into that race, and you just keep going back for appointment after appointment, surgery after surgery, whatever, until they figure it out.
And Jamie, and what was your experience? Again, yours, it sounded like it grew just several fold within the space of a few weeks.
It did, actually. It was, like I said, the size of a grape when I originally found the mass, and it was 3 weeks to the date that I went in to the surgeon for actual removal. He did do a biopsy, and the biopsy was coming back inconclusive. It was such a hard mass that the biopsy needle was bouncing off, and he just wasn't getting a good enough sample. So that's when he said, well, it's continuing to grow, so we really need to remove it anyhow. And when he went in to remove it, it had gone from the size of a grape to the size of a tennis ball in 3 weeks.
Wow, that's just phenomenal that it could be like that. We have some callers on the lines already, and what I want to tell you is that we have several people who we know will be calling in who are not only survivors, but who through their journey have developed either a product or service that they wish that they had, and so that they have since gone on to develop for other people going through the journey behind them. And so we'll be hearing from some of them as well. But for now, first let's go to Vonda in, I'm not sure where she is. She can tell us where she's calling from. Vonda, hi, you're on the air with Jennifer and Jamie.
Hi, Jennifer. Hi, Jamie. Hi, Ann. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Hi.
Great. I'm calling from Washington, D.C.
What did you want to say? Okay.
I also was diagnosed with breast cancer last year. I finished treatment in January of this year, and my story is a little different. I was diagnosed before the age of 40, and I'm single. I'm not married. I don't have any children, but I had awesome support through family and friends. And my diagnosis was actually triple-negative breast cancer, so it was invasive ductal carcinoma. So from the time that I found the lump myself and started treatment was probably the span of 3 weeks. So from the time I found it, had the biopsy, I was being prepped in surgery, started chemo 3 weeks later. Did 8 rounds of chemo, had a lumpectomy, and 32 rounds of radiation.
Wow. Mine's also a triple negative.
And Rhonda, what would you say to people out there listening who may be supporting loved ones? You said you didn't really have a family there, but you did have support, and I'm guessing from you saying that was very important. So what would you say to the people out there who are finding themselves in the position of supporting someone who is currently going through this journey?
Well, actually, my family was very supportive. We just don't live in the same state, but my family was extremely supportive. But I also have a family of friends who were hanging in there with me. And what I would say just from my loved ones that I was surrounded with, I think it's important to have the same mindset as the person who's actually diagnosed. So in other words, not have the gloomy, doomy, oh my goodness kind of reaction. If that person's spirit is to be a fighter, then you have to be a fighter. Because
you're saying be positive.
you got to be positive. I mean, it might sound very cliche, but that's where the battle starts. It starts in your mindset. And that's one thing that my mother always instilled in me growing up, is that whatever you set your mind to do, you can do. And I kind of carried that with me. So, and I think it's important to remember that you're still empowered no matter what. All the tests and all the things that the doctors tell you, and you're absolutely right, the doctors are there to help you survive. But I think at the same time, you have to be willing to fight, as hard as it may be, as tired as you are, because there are definitely days that I didn't have the energy to do anything, but I still had to look at this thing like, either I'm going to let cancer beat me or I'm going to beat it. And so I think that has to be your mindset.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Vonda. I'm sure I appreciate it, and I'm sure Jennifer and Jamie do as well. Jennifer and Jamie, let's go with Jamie first this time. What was the most important thing for you in terms of support from those around you? And just before you answer that, let me just remind our listeners that you can call in with your questions at 866-MONDAY-6. That's 866-MONDAY-6. Or you can also Skype in, and you can do that right through the website at mondaynightradio.com. You can send us questions and comments by Twitter to the Twitter address at Monday Radio, or you can email your comments to comments@mondaynightradio.com. And now that I've gotten that out of the way, Jamie, tell us what's been important for you in terms of support.
Definitely a strong family and friend network. When I found out that the cancer had spread, it was 2 days after Christmas, and I sent both my daughters to my parents' house, and I spent the weekend writing letters to each of them for birthdays, the day they get the driver's license, prom, their weddings, all these milestones that I was sure I was going to miss. And I had really hit rock bottom. I had no hope. I didn't see any hope in sight. I was pretty convinced that I was on borrowed time. And honestly, my friends were amazing. They kept me up, kept my spirits up, my family, my daughters. I mean, they were all amazing. The real turning point for me was actually when I started out with my new treatment at the cancer treatment centers. They hooked me up with a mind and body therapist who just let me talk. He just let me air it all out. If I needed to cry, I could cry. If I needed to shout, I could shout. And once I got through that, I realized I had a whole team of people on my side, and we started working and having to rebuild that. And once I got my spirits back up and I saw that there was hope, and I had a whole team of doctors and people willing to walk in front of me and show me the way, beside me if they needed to, and sometimes they even had to be behind me pushing me, if that's what it took. But I couldn't have done it without every single one of them. I really had an amazing support network, and I really couldn't have done it without them.
Jennifer, what about you? What would you say is the most important thing in terms of support that you have had provided, or that you would know to provide to someone else in the same situation?
Well, my situation, having four kids, it was really important that someone else take care of their needs so that I could take care of myself and just get the rest that I needed, basically. And I'm blessed with a community that is wonderful about providing meals and any other needs that my family or my kids had. So I didn't have to worry about that, and I could just really focus on my rest and my healing. And that's the physical part. But the spiritual and the emotional support is what's really important and what is ongoing for me, especially right now, just healing the factors that contributed to the cancer in the first place. And that is just uncovering all the emotional wounds that hadn't been healed throughout my life. So someone to talk to, someone that just listens and just holds the space for my emotional healing, that's very important. Also, I got hooked up with our local cancer center, and they have a breast cancer survivors group, and it's a group of women at various stages of their diagnosis or treatment that get together, and we can talk the nitty-gritty together, just honestly, openly. We all have, you know, different experiences, different kinds of cancer, different kinds of treatments, but there are things that we can really relate to one, with one another, and just be real with one another. So that's been really incredibly helpful too, and just having friends that are comfortable with, you know, when they ask me how am I doing and I cry, that are okay with just giving me a hug. And just being okay with that and not trying to fix me, not trying to give me another book or another website. This is the cure for cancer. Eat, you know, 50 green grapes a day and, you know, 20 ounces of artichoke juice or whatever. You know, I understand the intention behind that, the love and the concern and wanting to help. But what really helps, I think, especially at the early stage, is just some love, just some holding. And
now, Jamie, you're chuckling. So has someone recommended you drink 20 ounces of artichoke juice, or what caused the chuckle there?
Well, you know, I always knew I had amazing and wonderful friends, and it's true, as Jennifer said, they mean well. And so you would get the emails that, you know, well, have you seen this thing? You really need to be having this quantity of pureed asparagus a day, and you really need to be having 3 servings of these Brussels sprouts. And amazingly enough, they were all the vegetables that I don't care for. and so they meant well, and their intentions, I know they had my best interest at heart, and they were afraid. They were as afraid as I was of losing the fight. But there's a wealth of knowledge out there. And it really showed me how much my friends and my family loved me when, within the first couple weeks, I mean, I must have gotten the same email from at least a dozen of them regarding certain foods I should be eating and certain foods and drinks that I should not be consuming. And I thought, you know, these are people that are taking time out of their schedule. They must be sitting up at night doing the exact same thing I am, poring over the information that's out there on the internet to see what I could do to rally and fight it myself. And it's amusing. In hindsight, you know, they meant well, and I think it's funny. I still get the occasional email on different pureed foods I should be consuming in mass quantities.
Well, let me start with you.
I like that. Can I add something, Annie?
Yes.
I just want to say, too, that through the whole process, I just felt so much love and support coming from so many people in my community, and I can't thank them enough and just express enough gratitude for that. And that, you know, I even felt that, you know, maybe this is one reason that cancer exists, is that so we can receive this kind of love and we can give this kind of love to one another.
Well, you know, Jennifer, it's amazing that you say that at this very moment, because we have just had a question come in from the chat room, and callers who are waiting and holding, please bear with us. We have a lot of callers, and I promise you that we're going to do our best to get to each and every one of you. And let me take this opportunity to remind people that you can call in at 866-MONDAY-6. That's Monday for Monday Night Radio, 866-MONDAY-6. You can Twitter us at Monday Radio, and you can email comments to comments@MondayNightRadio.com. And we have a lot of people in the chat room, and the question from the chat room that just speaks right to what Jennifer and also you, Jamie, were just saying, was, she says, I have heard cancer survivors say they are glad they had cancer because of the deeper healing and growth it brought them. It's hard for someone who has not had cancer to understand. Do you guys feel this way?
I feel absolutely blessed. I'm so thankful and so grateful to so many different things that cancer has brought into my life. I didn't mind being bald for 20 months. It's just hair. It grows back. But the friends, the new friends that are now lifelong friends, friends that maybe you lost touch with over the years, but maybe caught up on your story, seeing an interview that I did, or maybe somebody posted something on Facebook and they heard through the grapevine. I really do. I think that we're only given the hands, dealt the hands that we can handle. And it's just brought so many wonderful people and new things and new appreciations to my life that I don't regret it. I wouldn't go back and change it if I could.
Well, Jennifer, do you feel the same way?
No, not exactly. I can't really say that I'm glad that I had cancer, but I can say that I'm really, really pleased with where I'm at right now in my life as a result of the catalyst for change that cancer brought into my life, if that makes sense. I wish that, you know, maybe the catalyst could have been a different one, but it wasn't. It was this. And so for that reason, I'm happy with, you know, the changes that are taking place. And again, what I said before, just feeling all the love and support that continues to pour toward me and my family. That's really beautiful.
Well, speaking of those changes, you've both had mastectomies.
Yes.
And I don't think that there is a woman out there who can possibly fathom, I know I can't wrap my head around what that would be like, not just physically, but, you know, especially in our culture, you know, in addition to nursing babies with our breasts, which if we have done that and then you face losing that, I can imagine on one level in itself is just really does a number on your brain. But also in our society, you know, so much is wrapped up on how we look from, you know, between the neck and the waist. And, you know, starting as little girls, I mean, that's been just sort of pounded into us that that's where our femininity is. So mm-hmm. Can you each talk a little bit, and we'll start with Jennifer, if you don't mind, this time. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, tell us what that's like. What kind of changes did that put you through? What is it like to deal with losing such a visible part of what makes you a woman?
It's pretty weird, Annie, and I only had a few weeks really to contemplate the whole thing before the mastectomy. I was fortunate to have a photographer friend, and she took some photos of me topless, and that was nice because it was a time that we could kind of celebrate my body the way that it was or at that time and that I can look back and remember. And wow, you know, and then coming out of the mastectomy was funny, too, in a way, because at the first thing they do is the mastectomy, the general surgeon removes all the breast tissue and the nipple, and then the plastic surgeon comes in and starts the reconstruction process right then and there and inserts a spacer and fills it with about 150 cc's of saline solution. So I came out of surgery already with a new breast growing, so to speak, and it was funny to me because I said, "Oh my God, I couldn't not have a breast in this society, not even for a day or a month or a week. You know, we have to get it in there right away." But I understand the reason for doing that, you know, surgically and everything, so I wouldn't have to go through another major surgery again. But it just seemed kind of funny to me that. Hurry, get the new breast in there, you know. It has been an interesting journey, and it still is. My reconstruction isn't done yet. I did have the exchange, which means they take out the spacer, which is really quite uncomfortable. It's hard. I've got it in my hand right now. It probably weighs, feels like it weighs a pound. Make a great paperweight. And it's in there, and it's what it does. It goes in between the pectoral muscles and spreads those muscles out. They continue to fill that spacer with saline solution over 4 to 6 weeks, and it really gets quite painful. Toward the end, it was more painful than the mastectomy itself that I can recall. I couldn't even lift my body out of bed. I felt like I had broken ribs, and, you know, I was on Vicodin and everything. So once they get that space between the pecs opened up enough, then they can do the exchange where they put in the nice, you know, squishier gel implants. And I had that done, and things aren't quite right, so I have to have that done again. And so I'm still getting to know my new girls and bonding with them and falling in love again and all that good stuff. And it is quite interesting.
How about you, Jamie? What can you add to that?
Well, mine was a triple negative infiltrating ductal carcinoma. So when they went in and did the mastectomy, they didn't immediately put a tissue expander in. So I was on chemo for 20 months straight and had to deal with wearing a prosthetic. And when I woke up from the surgery, my friends and my family were kind of shocked too. I was really expecting to have more of an emotional meltdown, if you will, waking up and, oh my gosh, one of the girls is gone. What, somebody fix it. And I really just didn't have that. I think because early on I knew that, okay, this is what's going to happen. My surgeon was up front. We'll take one. If we need to take both, we'll take both. But in the end, you'll get a new set of implants, and won't that be great pre-breastfeeding for you? And I thought, wow, I could have found probably a less invasive way to go about getting breast augmentation, but I'll take it. And so the prosthetic, you know, living in Arizona with the heat, it was very cumbersome. Created some neck and shoulder problems because you have one that's a natural weight and one that was the prosthetic that I had was of a fiber fill instead of the silicone, so that it wasn't as heavy and hot for the summertime. But I really didn't have any emotional, I don't know, I didn't really have any kind of major emotional meltdown with losing one, even though I didn't have one for quite a while. It wasn't until 6 months ago, six, 7 months ago, that they went in and put, did a left mastectomy, took that tissue out, and put in the tissue expanders. So I went for quite a while with just having the one, and I did okay. I think if I hadn't been hit with such a dire prognosis up front, I maybe have been more worried about that, but mm-hmm. my main concern was living to see the new girls get put in.
All right, let's go to a caller. Again, you can call, and you're listening to Monday Night Radio with Jamie and Jennifer, two breast cancer survivors who are sharing everything with you. You can call them at 866-MONDAY-6. Or Twitter us at Monday Radio, or send us comments by email to comments@mondaynightradio.com. And let's go to Candy in Idaho. She is a survivor who is calling in to talk about a positive journey. Candy, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello, Ann, Jennifer, and Jamie.
Hi, Candy. Thank you for joining us. What's your comment?
Well, I think one of the things that I think has been most outstanding for me as I've talked to so many people, and I'm coming up on 5 years of surviving stage three with 65 weeks of chemotherapy and 42 treatments of radiation. And so I think everyone's walk is so entirely different. And when I'm listening about reconstruction, I was 2 years out before I had reconstruction, and I chose not to have invasive anything implanted into my body because I already had something taken out that was negative, and that was the cancer. And so they used my own body tissue to create a breast. And so, you know, that's where I say is everyone's walk is different, and the joy for me was after I had the reconstruction and stood up at a football game and heard the Star Spangled Banner and put my hand on my heart and felt that I was whole again, tears came out of my eyes. Mm-hmm. So that was a really powerful moment with the reconstruction. But I did want to talk about the journey of the support and how different people made a different impact. And one of the things that we did with, and I have grandchildren, is we made a paper chain for each of the different treatments that I would have, because I considered mine a wellness program and not a cancer journey. And so every time we got rid of a paper chain, we had huge celebrations because we had just climbed a different mountain. So that was one of the things that I think was really, really helpful, is the miniature celebration. And at one time, we threw confetti in the doctor's office, and he stopped and he said, "Don't anyone clean this up. I want people to see that celebrations are important in their journey."
Oh, that's pretty awesome. Well, Candy, thank you very much for that comment, and thank you for being a survivor. One of the questions that we have for you ladies from the chat room, and first I should say that the people in the chat room are just talking about how impressed they are with what they're hearing from you. You guys are so amazing and articulate. And but one of them has a question that is, we hear that chemo can produce an abundance of severe side effects, including becoming nauseous from any sense. And I'm not sure how this relates to the other part of her question, which is, are there any skincare products that are safe and effective for those undergoing the same devastating cancer treatments? I assume she means in terms of the scent that won't make you nauseous. And as it happens, I think one of the people calling in will be talking about the skincare line she created just for that reason. But if each of you could talk a little bit about that particular side effect of chemo and how you dealt with it. Jamie, did you find that you had that sort of a reaction or any other bad reaction to chemo?
Absolutely. In terms of the nausea, coffee was absolutely a staple of mine. And shortly after starting chemo, even the smell of coffee was just nauseating. On top of the everyday nausea, certain smells would trigger things. In terms of the skincare products, I didn't really have any scents that way. Anything that was really strong, you know, or tended to be overpowering could certainly create a little bit of nausea. But I did notice that my skin went through changes once I was on the chemo. Any product or lotion that had alcohol in it, and my skin would just turn flaming red. And it would be sore and itchy, and I was actually amazed at the number of lotions that are out there for eczema and for skincare problems that actually contain alcohol. So I spent an afternoon at the pharmacy, and I sat there and went through, I think it was 82 bottles of lotion before I found one that was alcohol-free, and I just stuck with that one through the entire treatment. And I still use it. There's a line of pure and natural soaps that I found, body washes and shampoos. They're also alcohol-free, and that pretty much took care of any skin problem. But I understand where she's coming from with the nausea. It can be debilitating because you can be out in public shopping or at a store, and a particular scent hits you, and it's all you can do to get out of the store or get to the restroom before you think you're going to be sick.
Understood. And that's just one of the many things that I think people just don't really realize. Again, you know, that's why we're doing this show, is because there's so much about the actual process that if you haven't been there, you just can't know. Callers who are holding, if you have a question and you haven't yet talked to producer Evan, remember to press 1 on your dial pad there, and that will signal us that you are not only just listening through your phone, but that you would like to make a question or a comment. And let's now go to Norma in New Jersey, and she has actually authored a book for survivors. Norma, hello. Welcome to Monday Night Radio with Ann, Jennifer, and Jamie.
Hi, thank you for having me on. First, I want to say to Jennifer and Jamie how impressed I am just with the courage and also the sense of humor that they have taken with their breast cancer journeys, just especially also having it so young in life. I was 40 years old when I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and I was the ninth woman in my mother's family to have it. My mother died of metastatic breast cancer. I have three great aunts that died of it. I have one aunt, my mother's sister, who is also a survivor like me. And actually, when I went through it, two second cousins of mine on that side of the family, we all had breast cancer at the same time. I had three young kids. They were under the age of 12. And even though I had DCIS and LCIS, I decided to do bilateral mastectomies with immediate breast reconstruction. A couple of comments that I did want to make just from listening to them share their stories is, in terms of reconstruction, I had interviewed my doctor who did the reconstruction on me. He is a feature story in my book, Pink Ribbon Journey, Stories from the Heart. And the one thing he really impresses upon women to think about and to remember is that breast reconstruction has nothing to do with your prognosis. It's all about quality of life, and it's about making you look and feel like a normal woman after you've undergone such a traumatic surgery to your body and losing two of the most important parts of your body for a woman. So that was one point that I wanted to make. And also to just say that, you know, we all can go through the journey of breast cancer, but we each take away with it a different kind of unique and special experience. And that is one of the things that I focus on in my book. And I interviewed 13 people for the book, and it weaves together both the patient and clinical perspective of the breast cancer journey. So it's a very uplifting book, and it really also is a great resource for newly diagnosed women with breast cancer. And the doctors really speak about where treatment is headed in the future, where it was in the past, and why there are so many women surviving breast cancer today because of the treatment and the diagnostic technology and stuff like that. So if anybody is interested in the book, they can visit my website at www.pinkribbonjourney.com, and also they can find us on Facebook. And I thank you very much for taking my call.
Well, Norma, thank you very much, and thank you for taking your journey and doing something so constructive with it as to write a book to, you know, for others that are on their journey. Thank you so very much. Jennifer, I'm going to put you on the spot only because you're the first person who told me about this, but we can ask Jamie about it as well. I had never before heard the term nipple origami until you told me about it. And I looked it up, and it's a real thing, and it does not involve paper, which is probably good because you wouldn't want paper cuts there. So can you tell us what that is, and have you had it?
I haven't had it yet. It's on my bucket list. from what I understand, I don't know exactly how it happens, but a little bit of the skin right where you want your nipple is cut and pulled up and kind of folded on itself and stitched to make a little nipple protrusion. And I asked my surgeon the other day, you know, how do they look? And he said, oh, they look great. So hopefully it will.
Jamie, do you have anything to add to that?
Yet to be seen.
No, I think that's next on my list. And from what I've seen, there's a lot of websites where you can just Google nipple reconstruction, and they'll show pictures of women who have opted to maintain one natural breast and only have the other side reconstructed. And you can't tell which nipple and which areola complex is the real one and which one was stitched together and tattooed on. You really cannot tell the difference. And these photos are fairly close, so it's like getting a custom job there.
That's pretty interesting. And
cool.
When you mentioned tattoo, you're talking about the areola tattoo, which goes with the nipple origami to give you the complete picture, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that I understand.
Wow. That's
we have
pretty impressive, I have to say.
Too. Yeah, there's a period I don't know, 6 months to a year where one is to wait for that because the scar tissue around the nipple isn't ready yet, I guess, to take the tattoo.
Uh-huh.
And I also just want to add, Annie, that I never planned on having a tattoo. I don't have any tattoos. But when the doctor was talking to me about a tattoo, I thought color and pattern and design. So now I'm collecting all kinds of beautiful mandala type images. And now I kind of want to have, like, the nipple areola of the month tattoo kind of thing going. So I don't know what I'll do there.
So maybe have a flower.
While we're on the subject of nipples, I'm a knitter and a crocheter. Those are my sons laughing in the background, by the way. While we're on the subject of nipples, let's embarrass my teenage sons. Okay. Anyway, I told my doctor, I'm going to crochet myself a nipple. And he kind of looked at me and he said, I think you're going to be the first one that's ever done that. And I said, well, you know, I'm going to. And sure enough, I did. And I came in with that shortly after my mastectomy. It looks great. So
great.
I encourage women to make nipples.
I think that's absolutely great. Let's go to another caller. We've got Joanne from Dallas calling in. She's a survivor with something to add to the show. And Joanne, for some reason, my phone is not unmuting you. Let me try that again. There we go. Joanne, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi,
I'm
Joanne.
Here.
Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me. First of all, I really would like to say especially to Jamie and Jennifer and Candy that, you know, how much admiration I have for them, and especially Jamie for not taking the doctor's recommendation to take something just to keep me comfortable. I really am a believer, like Vonda said, you run your show. You get aggressive, you run your show. You really have to go after it, and you can't just sit back.
Okay.
And just take, you know, a piece of advice that maybe doesn't sound right to you.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it's my journey. For me, it's been 8 years, and I was fairly shocked, even though I had had three non-cancerous biopsies since college. But this one was so tiny, I could barely even feel it. I didn't expect it to come back with anything, and it came back non-cancerous, but the tissue next to it came back cancerous, and so they said your only option is a mastectomy. And I said, well, heck, I've been doing this dance since college on the lumps and the biopsies. I'm going to have a bilateral mastectomy and reconstruction. And you, what's funny to me is that some of your smartest friends, at least mine, didn't really understand the reconstruction. I mean, I was sitting across from one, and I said, okay, it is skin-saving. And she all of a sudden, the light bulb went off, and she said, oh, so they only take out the stuffing. Now I understand. And it's an interesting journey, and there are a lot of ups and downs. The expanders, which I believe it was Jennifer called them spacers. I called them expanders. I thought they were just the devil in the deep blue sea. They were uncomfortable, you know, with the drainage tubes and everything. But getting through the construction process, I look better than I did before, which is great.
Mm.
And had a great family to support me through that journey, and made a lot of great friends. And it is a journey. And one thing I'd like to just toss out is that there are a lot of women I know in our community in Dallas who can't afford, don't have the insurance, or for whatever reason cannot get the surgery, cannot get the reconstruction, do not have the support group, don't know where to go. And in our community, we've supported Gilda's Club. We've supported the Breast Bridge Network, which all of my doctors are part of, that a percentage of their surgeries are donated to these women who can't afford the reconstruction, can't afford the surgery. And I just urge anyone who can help to look in their communities for those organizations where you can reach out and help someone who is not as fortunate as you are with the treatments that you're able to get.
Mm-hmm. Joanne, thank you very
yeah.
much for the comment. Oh, go ahead. Yeah, let me just go ahead. Jamie?
Can I add to that really quick, Annie?
Absolutely.
Yeah, like
let's say goodbye to Joanne just so she knows that that
thank you
you're
so
going
much for having me.
Thank you, Joanne.
Thank you
very much. Go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah, I'd just like to add that I, through this process, have met a young woman, age 30, diagnosed with, I think, stage 3, and or maybe more, really, you know, having to fight for her life. And luckily, she received grant money from Susan G. Komen to get really good quality care that she needs. So I really appreciate that grant money is there. And at the same time, I'd also like people to consider, instead of buying a bunch of products with the pink ribbon that maybe gives, you know, 5% or less of their profits to Susan G. Komen or some other foundation, to just donate directly to some of these organizations and foundations that do provide the services and treatment that women need that don't have insurance or live in an area that doesn't have really good care, so they can move to an area that does during their treatment and recovery.
That's a really good point, and I'm really glad you brought it up because, you know, that's been sort of one of the things that was the impetus for this show, which was there are just, yeah, I mean, every product out there has a pink ribbon, it seems. It's just, you know, even the pink ribbons have pink ribbons. And that's right, and it's almost reductive because it's almost that has become the face of breast cancer is pink ribbons, and that is so what we wanted to get away from with this show, to really put real faces to it, and this is really what happens, and to not let people sort of be complacent and think, oh, well, you know, I bought a nail file with a pink ribbon, so there you go. Now everyone's going to be great, and they're going to cure breast cancer. So what a great suggestion to just donate directly rather than, you know, I mean, you should certainly buy products that have pink ribbons if you want to, but again, donating directly, you could spend the same amount. You know, the $10 that you will spend on, you know, a product that has a pink ribbon will give, you know, maybe 50 cents to Susan G. Komen, whereas you could just donate that $10 and they'd get the whole $10. Let's go to another caller. And we have, where was she? Karen from Alabama. And she has done something in Alabama to support survivors as well, as I understand it. Hi, Karen. You're on the air with Jennifer and Jamie and me.
Hi, Annie. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate that.
Thank you for calling in. We appreciate you.
Well, I've been listening to their story, and I very much admire what they have to say. I think, though, I want to make the point for your listeners that not only is it important for them to have their medical treatments tended, of course, but so often what is overlooked is the spiritual component. And that's just what I wanted to encourage women who are going through this journey, that, you know, the spiritual component can be equally as healing as the medical component. And so what I discovered through my own journey was that indeed was true. And as a matter of fact, what I learned was that you could use this devastating illness to be a faith-producing opportunity. And so in the midst of that, I also came to understand that I wanted more spiritual depth in my own journey. And so after I recovered from that, and years later, it took me quite a while, but I did finally write a Bible study. And it is specific to the cancer journey, not necessarily to breast cancer, although that was my story. But I wanted to be able to provide people with more hope, spiritual encouragement, and comfort. And so what I did was to integrate my story with lots of biblical references and illustrations, parallels, and not only that, but to intermingle the reader's own story, to be able to let them interact with the study itself. So I've had that out for several months now, and it's called Confronting Cancer with Faith. Whereas most people can often confront it with fear, this is an alternative to confront it with faith. And it's a 6-week study. It can be used as a self-study. It can be used as a small group, you know, a coffee table, a coffee meeting with a friend, just however. It's very versatile. You can look at lessons one by one, you know, do it as it's prescribed as a six-week format. But however, each lesson stands alone, but it is very much an encouraging source of reference for people going through this journey.
Well, Karen, I have two questions for you. One is, where can people find this? And secondly, is it non-denominational?
Yes, it's definitely non-denominational. It is geared to the Christian. However, it is also for non-believers or believers for other faiths. It can be found through my website is the easiest route, which is www.confrontingcancerwithfaith.com. Can be ordered directly or through Wine Press Publishing.
Okay, and that was www.confrontingcancerthroughfaith.com.
I'm sorry, it's confrontingcancerwithfaith.com.
Oh, yes. Sorry, confrontingcancerwithfaith.com. Well, that's excellent, Karen.
All one long phrase. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. Jamie, I think we started with Jennifer last time, so I'll put you on the hook. Just to ask you how your spirituality, to the however you define that, did it change? Did it help? Did you go through a crisis of spiritual questioning? How did this whole process impact that aspect of your being?
It was actually quite significant in my story. Young as a child, after losing my grandfather, I had pretty much put certain spiritual beliefs aside and had adopted a different kind of non-believer approach to the Christian faith. And it wasn't when I received my diagnosis. Even then, I struggled with it. I looked at my two daughters and I thought, how in the world can this be? And my concern wasn't really for myself. My concern was more, if there is a God and why does he not see these two beautiful faces in front of me? Does he not have the same fear and worry for them that I have? And so, again, I was kind of pushed it more to the back burner that, this is something I have to go on my own. And I was just amazed. Family members from back east, my grandmother, my own mother, the number of prayers and prayer chains that I was put on just grew exponentially. Every other day I would get another phone call, you've been added to this prayer chain. And I thanked them all profusely. I was certainly not going to turn it down. I was willing to accept whatever help or support that I could muster. But it wasn't until after a surgery, I had a small reoccurrence in my liver after I started at the cancer center. And I was tired. My faith, my hope was up. I was seeing light at the end of the tunnel, but I had gotten to a point where I had been in the hospital several times with pneumonia. I had a liver resection done where they removed the bottom third of my liver. And when it came time to wake up after surgery, I was just kind of stuck, for lack of a better word. They hadn't let my family in yet, but I was just so tired. I was so tired of the pain. And I woke up, in my mind I woke up anyhow, and I could feel the pain. And I just thought, you know what, staying asleep is just a much safer place for me to be. And they kept trying to rouse me awake. I just wasn't coming to. I kept sleeping, and they couldn't get me awake, so they weren't letting my family in. And the chaplain at the cancer center came in, Suzanne. She's an absolutely wonderful woman. And I could hear her voice, and she was talking to me. And it was very comforting, but at the same time, I just thought, no, I'd just rather stay where I am. If it's in limbo or I just don't wake up, I won't have to acknowledge the pain. And she kept coaxing, and your daughters are here. You know they're going to want to see you. You have to open your eyes. And there was just a moment where it just hit me, and I opened my eyes, and she was there, and I saw her face, and I knew then she had been sent to me, not just because she's the chaplain at the Cancer Center, but she was kind of my guardian angel, and I've often told her since then, you know, I wouldn't have come full circle and reaccepted my faith and that of my family and the majority of my friends if it hadn't been for that moment, if she hadn't been there when I needed her the most. And so I think that God sends us little messages and messengers when he knows that we need them the most.
If we're open to them, we'll see them. Jennifer, how about you in terms of spirituality? How has this or has it affected you and impacted questioning or reaffirming, or what impact has this journey had on your own spirituality and beliefs?
Well, first of all, I have to go back to when I first discovered the lump, Annie. I just instantly recognized that it was a message from my soul or my higher self that I need to make some big changes in my life. Right away, I knew that there were some changes that I was kind of sitting on the fence about, and instantly I knew what side of the fence I needed to land on. And through that process of going through the experience of cancer and the healing that I'm still undergoing now, even though my body is, you know, could be called recovered or recovering from cancer, I'm still really doing the deep soul work and the emotional healing of the things that led up to cancer being in my body. And and along that, it's been a pretty amazing route, because, you know, people have come into my life that I couldn't do this without. So, yeah, it's been an amazing journey, and so I am thankful for that message of cancer.
Okay. Let's go now to someone who's been waiting very patiently. We have Lenore, who is in, I think, Denver, who has a book that she's written. Hi, Lenore. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, thank you for calling
in. Can you hear?
What would you like to tell us?
Yeah, it's actually three books that I want to talk about. They're all related to breast cancer. The first one is the book that I wrote myself. And I'm a 12-year survivor, by the way. I had cancer in 1998 and a mastectomy with no reconstruction. And my book is called Another Chance at Life, A Breast Cancer Survivor's Journey. And by the way, the listeners can find full information about all three of these books by just going to the homepage of my website. And that's very simple, and it's www.dvorkin.com. That's my last name, Dvorkin. That's D as in David, V as in Victor, O-R-K-I-N. So www.dvorkin.com. And my book is the story of my own cancer and why I chose not to have reconstruction as one of the parts. And then it also has appendices on it about risk factors for breast cancer and ways to help prevent breast cancer and a lot more information. But it's mainly a very personal story about my breast cancer experience. And then the second book, I contributed an essay to this. It's a brand new book. It's a free e-book, and it's called How We Became Breast Cancer Thrivers. And it's edited by Beverly Vogt, who is the publisher of Breast Cancer Wellness Magazine. And it's 44 essays by breast cancer survivors. And my essay is in there. It's a 4,000-word essay that's in there. Did you have a question?
No, I'm just marveling at what you've put together.
Oh, well, well, this thing with Beverly Vogt's book just happened. I was invited to contribute an essay to it a couple of months ago, and then she put it together fairly rapidly. And I haven't read the whole book yet, but I just wanted to tell people about it, especially because it is a free e-book. So, you know, that makes it more attractive to people, I think. My book is not expensive at all. The paperback is only $9.95 from Amazon. And it's also in ebook format from smashwords.com, and that's only $2.99. So that's quite inexpensive also. And then the third book, besides being a writer, I'm an editor. I'm an editor and proofreader. And this last book I edited most of, and it hasn't been published yet. But the title of this is The Lovin' Ain't Over for Women with Cancer, and it's by a man named Ralph Alterovitz. He lives in Maryland, and his wife is Barbara. They wrote it together, Ralph and Barbara Alterovitz. And they run a place called the Center for Intimacy After Cancer Therapy. That's C-I-A-C-T. And the title comes from because Ralph himself had prostate cancer several years ago, and he wrote a book about sex after prostate cancer called The Lovin' Ain't Over, and so they just kind of continued that title for this one. This is The Lovin' Ain't Over for Women with Cancer, and it's about renewing sexual intimacy after breast cancer or gynecological cancer such as uterine cancer. And the book can be pre-ordered. It will come out in a month or two, I hope. So I just wanted to tell people about that also. And I did want to make the comment that this has been an extremely interesting show. I've listened to every minute of it here with great interest. And I did want to say that actually 4 out of 5 women, I just looked it up in new statistics, from this year, 4 out of 5 women do not have breast reconstruction after breast cancer, and I chose not to have it myself, and I just had a left-side mastectomy, and I've been perfectly fine wearing a very nice silicone prosthesis and some very nice mastectomy bras. It's quite comfortable. I'm not even aware that I have the thing on most of the time. And, you know, it's been a good choice for me. So just wanted to, you know, add that statistic there. And also I was looking at some stuff online here, and it said that not all women are good candidates for reconstruction. And a few factors that make them not be good candidates are if they are obese or they smoke or they have heart disease or diabetes, that those things can lead to serious problems after surgery. So, you know, just wanted to add that comment there.
Well, Lenore, thank you so very, very much. And, again, her website is dvorkin.com. That's D-V-O-R-K-I-N. Just a quick break for station identifier or show identifier. You're all listening to Monday Night Radio, and our guests are Jennifer and Jamie, who are both breast cancer survivors who are here telling it like it is. And you can call in at 866- Monday 6. Again, that's 866 Monday 6. You can Twitter us at Monday Radio or send us email questions or comments at comments@mondaynightradio.com. And I have to take this moment also to say that we are running over, and we fully anticipated that, but I'm not sure that we actually asked Jennifer and Jamie if that would work for them. And so if either of you or even both of you have to leave, by all means, let me know, and we will not hold it against you. We're so grateful to you being here. If you can stay for a while longer, we would love that, too.
These days, all I have is time.
All right. Well, we appreciate that. Thank you. And all right, well, let's go to another call.
I'll be here for a while.
All right. I'm sorry. I thought, yes. Let me just take this moment to collect and to thank the two of you personally, because this is just beyond anything that we even dreamed it would be. And you both are just so wonderful to come and talk like this, and we so appreciate it. And I don't know if you guys can see the chat room or not, or if you know to look in the chat room, and it's on the page right below your show description, but the women in there also are just talking about how incredible this show is, and it's because of you guys and the people that are calling in, and I'm very, very grateful to know both of you, Jamie just virtually and Jennifer personally as well. So thank you very, very much. And on that note, let's go to another caller and let's talk to Rhonda from Miami Beach. And it looks like she has got a website for survivors. Rhonda, hi there.
Hi, Annie. How are you? Hi, Jennifer and Jamie.
Hi. I'm well, but as you can tell, I'm starting to stumble on my words because I'm just so flabbergasted by this awesome show and these wonderful women. What's your comment?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say thank you to Jamie and Jennifer for sharing their stories. I know I didn't have to go through quite an extensive surgery as either one of them, but I can't imagine what it would have been like if I had. So I applaud their courageousness and bravery in going through that process and also sharing that information with us. But my website is really targeted for breast cancer survivors who are done with treatment, mainly because I had a lot more difficulty and more issues and challenges getting over treatment than I did actually going through treatment. And I didn't really understand the impact of going through mostly chemotherapy and radiation therapy and the impact that would have on me and how it would be more challenging for me to recover from that. And so I was inspired by my own personal experience to create breastcancerpartner.com. So it's really focused on helping breast cancer survivors recover through more of an integrated health and wellness approach and looking at the whole person rather than just looking at, you know, your medical care and your follow-up care after treatment. So it looks at the physical aspect, or the emotional, spiritual, as well as mental aspects of recovery. So, again, taking a more holistic approach.
Wow.
Great.
Well, that sounds go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah, I was going to say that in all this pink ribbon stuff, we always see and hear race for the cure and, you know, the focus on the cure and the treatment, and I'd like to see the focus more on healing, and the holistic approach is really the only way to do that, I think.
I think so. And
so thank you.
And for me, when looking for resources that focus more on survivorship and life after treatment, there isn't, you know, as much information or the abundance of information out there as there is for once you're diagnosed and once you're going through treatment. You know, there's this whole infrastructure to support you through that process, but when you're done, and your doctor says, come back and see me in 6 months or 3 months or whatever your follow-up treatment cycle is or appointment cycle is. And so you're kind of left up to your own devices to really sort it out and get your life back together. And, you know, for me, I just assumed that I could pick up my life where I left it off before my diagnosis, but it wasn't the same. And I certainly wasn't the same. So my normal was not what I expected it to be. And, you know, in some ways I'm still trying to figure that out, even though it's been 2.5 years. And I would imagine that you guys probably have been through the same experience or a similar experience.
Definitely.
And Rhonda, what's the URL for that website? What's the address, the web address?
Yeah, it's www.breastcancerpartner.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for your call. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome, and thanks again for taking my call. Sure.
Yeah, I just wanted to add something right there. I didn't get the caller's name, but what I really get from that is that she's saying that her experience with breast cancer, like mine, didn't end at the end of the treatment phase. But it just kind of opened her up to the whole emotional content of her life that needed healing too. And that is a huge part of the treatment that is probably not being addressed or is not being addressed by her current medical system. In order to not only to help the woman heal but to prevent, you know, recurrences of breast cancer, but in an even, you know, further holistic model to model for our children and our daughters how to live in a healthy way that would hopefully, you know, prevent them from taking on some of the emotional content that we can hold inside our bodies that can manifest in disease.
Well, and talking about kids in general, you're both parents, and so I'd really like to touch on how that played out for your kids. To, you know, how much did you tell them? How much did they know? How did it affect them? You know, and I know kids at different ages are in different stages, but I just can only imagine what this does to kids who are suddenly faced with the uncertainty, maybe, of, you know, is mom going to be here next year? And Jennifer, let's start with you.
It was pretty tough. From the beginning, you know, intuitively, I knew that I had cancer, although nobody else knew that at the time, and they wouldn't speak. They'd say, oh, 80% of this is, you know, benign, et cetera. And so I told my kids, you know, it's probably going to be okay. But I kind of left a little door open for them to know that it might not be, you know, it is going to be okay, but that it might be cancer. And actually, I didn't tell them, because the day I found out, I had a horrible, horrible headache, and I couldn't get off my bathroom floor. So their father explained things to them. I'm not sure exactly, you know, what was spoken, but I do know that they were all pro-mastectomy, because they really wanted to see the cancer removed from my body. And having a little daughter who's not developed, you know, her breasts yet, this has been probably fairly traumatic for her, and she's been kind of freaked out about it. She's kind of eye level with my breasts, so she's seen the changes right there in front of her. So it's something for us to continue to work on, and for her to work on too.
Do you think that she's afraid
that openness, that she might get cancer? Yeah, she definitely.
Well, just that growing breast is sort of the precursor to getting cancer, because that's what women do. You grow breasts, and then you get cancer in them.
Well, that could be. I hope it's not that definite with her, but there's definitely some fear associated there. And, you know, I brought home a few little coloring books that they give moms, you know, talking to kids about cancer and stuff like that. And she really liked those. Those were great. But I'd like to see more resources for the kids and support groups for the kids too.
Jamie, what about you? I'm not sure how many kids you have. I know you have teenage sons, because you told us that they were getting a chuckle out of the nipple discussion. But
oh, no, that was Jennifer's. I actually have I have two girls. They were 8.5 and 10 when I was diagnosed. And I was just very honest and upfront with them. At that age, I don't think they understood what cancer was. And their equation with cancer was going bald or dying, or a combination of the both. So we just talked through it, and, you know, are you going to be bald? Absolutely, I'm going to be bald. Are you going to wear a wig? Absolutely not. And then came the time when, you know, after the treatment had progressed and I had to undergo several transfusions, and that meant lengthy hospital stays, and the cancer in my lungs put me in the hospital with double pneumonia several times. And I was really amazed at how strong they were. They had seen me in the hospital with tubes and undergoing chemo, absolutely at my worst. And they really just took it with a grain of salt. It was when I would be at home and with what I thought was the least aggressive side effect, which was the nausea and the vomiting, that then they were able to identify. They could see mom in a hospital bed. They could see the tubes. They knew about the surgeries. They could see the treatments. But it wasn't something that they personally could identify with. But when I was sick to my stomach and on the bathroom floor in front of the toilet and vomiting, it would just reduce them to tears. And they would just come unglued. And it took me a little bit to figure out what was going on, but in their little world, that was the one thing that they had been through that they could identify with, and they knew how awful that was. They didn't know the chemo. They didn't know the hospital beds. They didn't know the IVs and all of that. But they could identify with me when I was sick to my stomach and vomiting. And it just terrified them. And we were able to talk through that. And it took a couple months because every time it was almost like clockwork. As soon as I would get sick, I had two crying girls. So I'm trying to deal with being sick, and they didn't want to leave my side. But the more they stayed, the more they cried. It took kind of a little bit of tweaking and just being honest with them for them to realize that, you know, Mom wasn't going to give up that easily. And there were several times my youngest daughter, when she'd come to see me at the hospital, and the tubes or the oxygen or any of those things might have scared her, and she'd get really concerned, and she had the loaded question, Mom, are you going to die? And it was all I could do not to lose it, and I would just smile at her and say, you know what, Bailey, not today. And that was sometimes the best I could do. That was the best I could offer, and the only guarantee I had was that I knew I had what it took to get through one more day. And that seemed to be enough for them, being open and being honest with them.
You're listening to Monday Night Radio with breast cancer survivors Jamie and Jennifer. You can call in and talk to them or ask a question or give a comment at 866-MONDAY-6. You can send us a question by Twitter at Monday Radio or by email at comments@mondaynightradio.com, or you can log in and join us in our chat room and ask a question that way. Now, earlier in the show, we were talking a bit about skin sensitivities and scent sensitivities while going through chemo. And Jamie, you mentioned that you were extremely sensitive. Your skin was very sensitive to anything that had alcohol in it. We have a listener in the chat room who was asking also about skincare that is safe and effective for those going through cancer treatment. And we have a caller on the line right now. And where'd she go? I think we lost her.
Uh-oh.
Hang on a minute. Oh, no, we didn't. There we go. It's Jo from Chicago, and she is going to tell you about something for these very things. Hello, Jo, are you there?
Yes, I am, Anne. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thank you so much for calling in, and I know that you have something to tell us about, and thank you for calling in and listening to Jamie and Jennifer.
Oh, well, it's been my honor to hear these very brave ladies tell their stories, and I have the world of respect for them. They are the real heroes, and I am not a breast cancer patient or survivor, but my daughter was. And that was the worst experience of my life, and it continues, you know, it's not that it's funny, but I sometimes say when cancer enters your life, you might as well set a place for it at the dinner table because it never goes away. It's always there. And there are so many different aspects and elements that you have to deal with and address. And, I mean, we're here talking about all of them, and, I mean, we could just go on and on and on forever. But one of the things that was most important to me was after seeing my daughter go through chemotherapy, and earlier on we had a caller, somebody called in with questions about skincare and whatnot. When I saw what skincare did to when I saw what chemotherapy and radiation did to my daughter's skin, I was devastated, and I wanted to do something. You know, you want so badly when you see your loved one to do something that's relevant, and nothing happens overnight. But what I did do was create a skincare product line that features the acai berry from Brazil, and it's 100% natural, including the natural preservative. It's a patented preservative. Now, there's millions of products out there that say natural, 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 and yes, their ingredients are, but then when you add the required preservative, that's the component that usually is not natural, and that's when it deteriorates from the natural ingredients. So what we've done is I found a formulator who has a strong background in oncology and only deals with raw materials. So the beauty of our products is its featured ingredient is this phenomenal acai berry from Brazil, which, by the way, the Chicago Tribune had just posted a very significant article in last Sunday's feature section talking about countries all over the world and what their ratios of breast cancer was. And in Brazil, it was practically nothing. And I've been in discussion with the reporters from the Tribune on this very issue saying, I'm no scientist, but do you think it's a little bit relative here? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we have this line of skincare that's available on ContessaCares.com. I'm sorry, that's www.ContessaCares.com. And I'm in the process right now of establishing a foundation that takes care of people who are in need of wigs and prosthesis and hopefully therapy, too, because we've talked about so many things. And, you know, the medical issues are one thing, but the psychological effects that cancer patients have and they stay with them are far, I mean, they just linger forever. And if you're single, there are certain issues. If you're married, there are certain issues. When you have children involved, there's still other issues, as we've discussed. And, you know, I mean, I sit and I watch all of these things occur, and they're horrendous to be able to address yourself. And some people, most people don't know how. They need help. And that's what I want to do, is I will dedicate the rest of my life to providing any possible help that I can. You have, again, the medical issues. You have all these other components, like, you know, wigs and pieces. And Jamie and Jennifer touched on both of those, and they're very costly. Insurance, if insurance pays for a portion of them, they certainly don't pay very much. And, you know, I mean, here you're dealing with women who have lost their breasts, one or both. And, you know, I mean, that's the thing it shouldn't be, but that's something that distinguishes us as women, and, you know, we love our bodies and we want to feel womanly. And now that's been taken away. You've lost your hair, and, you know, what can we do to make women feel a little bit stronger mentally and emotionally as well as medically? So that is my plight, and I really want to do as much as I can. And I'm listening to these brave, brave women fight their battle, and, I mean, I still feel so inadequate, and they just make me want to do more.
Thank you.
Well, Joe, thank you. Thank you so much for the call. And, again, that is ContessaCares.com. And
can I pipe in?
Yeah.
Is your name Contessa, or is that your daughter's name?
She's not.
I just... I just want to acknowledge her support of her daughter as a mom, and all the moms out there that are watching their daughters go through this. And I really want to thank my mom. It was an amazing journey for her also. From the time I went in for my first biopsy, she was there, and it was amazing the time that she spent with me when I came out post-op, because when they took out that initial chunk of flesh and I came out of anesthesia, I knew it was cancerous, and there was a lot of anger, a lot of sadness and grief there. And I just let it all out in the post-op room, and I wanted my mom, and she was there. And she was amazing, just holding that space for me and feeding me, spoon-feeding me applesauce. And she spent both nights with me at the hospital. She wouldn't leave, and it was just so sweet. It was such a healing time for us to be together. And I just want to acknowledge all the moms out there and in your journey with your daughters. Thanks.
Do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
You know, it's one of those things, being a mom of two girls, that you know, has kind of pushed me, because I've often said that if I was, you know, by myself and I didn't have children, what I have gone through, you know, quite the fight that I did, or what I have given up, you know, coming out of the mastectomy and the original diagnosis, it hit me hard, I'm not going to say, but it didn't. But what bothered me the most was having to make that phone call to my mom. And I replay that in my head all the time.
and it's a call that I don't want either of my daughters to ever have to make. Which is why I share my story every chance that I get, every opportunity that I'm asked to do so for these types of venues, and because it's just so important to me that we do something, that we empower ourselves as patients, as moms, as women, but at the same time not lose sight of the fact that it's not just women who are affected by breast cancer. Every 69 seconds in the United States, somebody loses their life to breast cancer, and it's not just women. I've taken a new slogan from a song by a Stand Up to Cancer organization. The song is called Just Stand Up, and there's a line in the song that says, be your own miracle, and that's what I'm trying to teach to my girls. That's what my mom has taught me from the time I was little, that gave me the strength to pull through and fight as much as I have, and I hope it's something that that I have passed on to my daughters, so that if their turn comes, they have what it takes.
Hello?
Say something to them. Hello?
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 Am I here?
You're there.
Can you hear me, Annie?
Yeah, you're there.
Okay.
Did we lose you?
I thought it, the call.
I think the connection went out.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. But no, you're here, and everyone can hear you, and they can call in at 866-MONDAY-6. And we have someone who has been just waiting so patiently, and so I definitely want to get to her. Her name is Brenda, and she's calling from San Antonio, and I hope she is still there. Brenda, are you there?
I am.
Hello? Hi, Brenda. Thank you for being with us.
Well, this is just an incredible show, and I get real emotional just thinking about all of these women. I have walked down similar roads as each one of your guests. I've had 10 breast cancer surgeries and 8 rounds of chemo, and, you know, when I went through breast cancer 6 years ago, I felt like there was really something missing from the treatment component. Most of the focus was on the cure. But as one of your other callers stated, kind of once you get breast cancer, you're sort of pushed off the edge of the cliff and left to sink or swim on your own. And you're out there paddling frantically and looking for answers. And so from my point of view, it became about survivorship, but not just for me, but for my family. And so where my journey has taken me, it's been on one of a healing physically and mentally and spiritually. I'm a woman of great faith. But it's also taken me, I've abandoned a career and started a media company to produce videos for cancer families, for every member of the cancer family. So our first endeavor is the breastcancersisterhood.com, and it's aimed at every member of the breast cancer family. When I was 12, my father died of cancer. My mother totally fell apart, and she and I role reversed. I became her caregiver, and that's a role I still play today in her life. When I was 37, my late husband died of cancer, so I was his caregiver, and now I'm the survivor. So I kind of feel like I know what cancer families need and what's missing from this healing mix. So I've taken a background as a journalist and a filmmaker and brought all of this together and produced over 100 videos for every member of the family. And it's everything from psychosocial oncologists telling discussing with parents, just like Jennifer and Jamie have been saying, what do you tell your kids? What's age appropriate? You know, for a 6-year-old, may not be for a 12-year-old or older. And how do you deliver this kind of information to them and give it to them in sections that makes it understandable for them? We talk about everything from lymphedema to diet and nutrition. We've partnered with Whole Foods on doing a series of nutrition videos at Whole Foods. I have one of the top breast cancer blogs on the Internet, Brenda's blog. And most of what I talk about is from that point of diagnosis through treatment and finding your new normal and beyond should recurrence develop. You know, there's so many things that if you start with point of diagnosis and treatment that on any given day, even the best of doctors fail to tell you about. I had a girlfriend that was diagnosed the same day I was. Her prognosis was just excellent, but she died actually as a result of cutting her cuticles during chemo. And no one had told either one of us that, you know, you're really vulnerable, your immune system is really down, infections can take their toll, and you shouldn't do things like cut your cuticles and floss your teeth. And unfortunately, that's what happened to her. And I kept saying, we were in different parts of the country, but we talked every day. And I would say, have you called your doctor? And she was kind of intimidated, I think. And she was not a good advocate for herself. And I would always say, you need to call your doctor. And she'd say, oh, but he's so busy, and I don't want to bother him. Mm-hmm. By the time that she did go to the emergency room, she had a staph infection that was systemic, and there was nothing they could do about it. So essentially, she died from cutting her cuticles. And that just
so
absolutely devastated me. And I thought, you know, there's got to be a better way. So that was another impetus for BreastCancerSisterhood.com. Everything has kind of come together to want to reach out and give women, whether they have just been diagnosed or they've been survivors for 20 years, information that they need to know. And we have a 19-year-old, Amy, who's blogging for us. And Amy was 13 when her mom was diagnosed. And her father left them the day after. And so Amy became her mom's caregiver. And I really have identified with Amy from the day I met her. And so she's a college sophomore now. Actually, she's in Europe this semester. And she's living in a castle with a moat. But she's continuing to blog. And she's talking directly to other kids and teens whose parents have cancer, not just breast cancer, but any kind of cancer.
And that website, again, is BreastCancerSisterhood.com, right?
.com.
Well, Brenda, thank
you. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Jamie, did you feel like you got everything that you needed from your doctors in terms of information, or did you feel like you really needed to do a lot of work yourself and be your own champion?
You know, with my first oncologist, I did. It was, okay, you have breast cancer, and this is the chemo that I'm going to put you on because you have an aggressive cancer, and we'll start next Monday. And as he's half in the door, half out, do you have any questions? Kind of daring me to ask one or not. And I didn't really feel like I had the information that I needed. I would stay up, you know, to the wee hours in the morning researching, doing my own medical research. What can I do to help myself for the treatment? I was really lost. And
I had to ask and do some digging. What kind of cancer do I have? Because nobody's told me. I know it's breast cancer, but is that all there is to it? It's just breast cancer, or can you tell me some more? And so I wanted to kind of touch on it. I'm glad that you asked, because when I started at the Cancer Treatment Centers of America, they take the whole holistic approach and the whole body approach to healing. So every time I went for my visits, I saw my oncologist, and he would go through my labs and my scans and how my values were. And then I would see the nutritionist, and she would go through foods that could help with my fight, foods that would help with my lab values, my red count, my white counts are low, foods that would help battle the nausea, and foods to stay away from. Then I would see my naturopathic doctor, and she would come in and have me on different supplements and natural products that would also help ease the side effects of the nausea, the chemo, the radiation ablation, and then I saw the mind and body therapist. So there was all these different components that came together under one roof, and I was just kind of in the center. I was the focal point, and for once I felt that I had a team, and they were actually working towards the same goal. I wasn't just an HMO claim. I wasn't just a copay. I wasn't just another number sitting in a waiting room. That their investment in me was as much as I was investing in myself, and they haven't left my side since day one. I can identify with the what do you do after your treatment. I had to go in every month for my scans and every month for my lab values because my cancer was so aggressive. The first time my doctor said, you know what, we can move you to the three-month plan, it was a little war raging inside my head. Half of me was shouting hooray, and the other half was absolutely terrified. All the what ifs. Well, what if the cancer comes back, and what if we wait 3 months? And the first month came and went. Any sniffle I had, any cough, oh no, what if it's back in this? And all I had to do was talk with my care manager. The chaplain would call me to see how I was doing. My care manager would call. There's constantly people calling and checking on me. I get busy with my schedule now and get caught up in work, and I get a phone call in the middle of an afternoon that, you know, this is your care manager. This is Cherie calling. This is Julie calling from the Cancer Center. We haven't heard from you in a couple weeks. We're just making sure that you're still eating your veggies and doing what you're supposed to be doing. So they're constantly checking up on me, and I don't have that feeling of abandonment or loss or what do I do with myself now, because they're now kind of an extended family. Whether I hit the one-year mark for remission, 2, 3, or 5 years, they're always going to be there. And I have there's support and there's comfort and security in knowing that they're there and they're just a phone call away.
Jennifer, how about you? Do you feel like you've got that kind of a support network from your medical providers? Do you feel like they really let you know all the things that you needed to do and not do, or did you have to sort of go out and figure it out for yourself?
Oh, I think we all have to go figure it out for ourselves, really. I mean, because everyone's path is different and all the cancers are different, or, you know, there are different combinations of things. So the different practitioners that I sought out, I found some that have been very helpful. And but my surgeons and are, you know, they know what they know and they didn't have breast cancer, but they've experienced people in their offices and they can only share what they know from their side. So the best support that I've received has come from the breast cancer support group with other women going through the process, and it's part of the Rocky Mountain Cancer Center, and they have a specific nurse just that contacts all the new breast cancer patients, and she's got the breast health navigator, and I can go to her anytime, and she'll give me resources or hook me up with people in the community or just listen.
just hold my hand. And, you know, I went there the day before my mastectomy. I still wasn't even sure if I was going to go through with it. And I just cried, and she just held my hands. And she came and visited me at the hospital. So she's been my best resource in the medical community. And I do want to say one thing, though, about, you know, when women are told that they have breast cancer, I think there needs to be more, there definitely needs to be more sensitivity and awareness around that with the doctors that are delivering the message. I mean, it was so obvious to me that I had cancer when the receptionist at my doctor's office called and said, well, we need you to come in on Wednesday instead of on Friday. And I said, well, is this because it's bad news? And she said, well, I don't know anything about that. We just need you to come in. I'm going, doctors don't have you come in sooner if it's good news. You know, I said, tell me now. I really want to know now. Don't make me wait overnight. And they wouldn't do that. So I hope there's some doctors listening out there tonight, too.
Well, now, Jamie, we have someone calling who's asking specifically for you. We have Jim calling from the San Francisco area. Jim, you're on the line with Jennifer and Jamie.
Hi, how are you guys?
We're well. I'm well.
Jamie, you are an inspiration to me. I've gone through stomach cancer and pancreatic cancer, and I've gotten to know you over the years, and I just wanted to call and tell you how proud I am of you and how strong you are and how much that means to me in my life, because when I got the notice that I was cancer clear, I didn't get that Toyota kick in the pants kind of yahoo, I'm doing great. I didn't get any of that. I just kind of went back to my humdrum life of trying to make things work out. And you know, I know you, and you know me, and I have gotten to watch you over the last 2 years, and I cannot think of another person that I have more respect for and more regard for, and you are my light, and I am very grateful to have you in my life. So I wanted to just jump in this conversation and embarrass you and tell you I care about you. So I hope to hear from you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for the call. Jamie, are you embarrassed?
No, I don't get embarrassed. I don't get the 20 months bald, or I'm not quite sure what it is. I don't get embarrassed, but I do. I mean, I had an amazing network of friends and supporters who rallied, you know, beside me, in front of me, sometimes pulling and leading the way, and other times behind me pushing me to get to the next stage. And it wasn't always easy, but I really couldn't have done it without every single one of them.
All right, we have one other person that has been holding on almost as long as Brenda had, and again, I'm so grateful to all of the callers for hanging in there with us. And so let's go to Aka from Florida. I'm not sure if I'm saying it right, and I'm also not unmuting her right. For some reason, I am not able to bring her on. Hang on, just bear with me. There we go. Are you there?
Yes, I am, and you did say it right.
I'm sorry about that technical difficulty. I think we've really taxed the system tonight and really put it to the test. Thank you for hanging in there with us, and you're on the air with Jennifer and Jamie.
Thank you for having me, and hello to everybody. My little bit of input tonight is that I have been diagnosed with cancer as well in November of 2008. The story is a little different because I have had a background as a health practitioner, which is complementary medicine from Germany, and I'm also a hypnotherapist. So I have all this complementary knowledge in the back of my head while I got the diagnosis. And one of the most important aspects that I have found that I really would like to share is that about 2 minutes after I got the news, I had a friend sitting next to me at that moment, and he pointed out to me, okay, remember, you are not the diagnosis. It will change you, but you are not the diagnosis. And I think that is one of the most important things, that when we as a caregiver, or I'd like to call them advocates, when we are having friends, if we have family members who are dealing with the diagnosis of cancer or any other life-threatening disease for that, that we remind them that they are a person. It is so very easy when you start doing all the treatments and your life all of a sudden stops the way you know it, but you are running from one doctor's appointment and one surgery to the next, and in between you recover, that we get caught in that whole model and forgetting who we are. And when we are reminding ourselves as well as being reminded by the people around us that we are more than a person who has cancer, that we are still who we are, and that this diagnosis and the journey we all take, which is very, very individual journey, I agree, that it most likely will change us, and that we have a say in what kind of change that is, that as we hear from Jamie, as we hear from Jennifer and the other callers, the diagnosis has done something with us. And as far as what I have heard tonight, and I would say the same for me, I wouldn't necessarily volunteer to have it again, but it certainly has changed me and made me a better person, I believe.
And if I could say something too, I really appreciate you bringing that up. I came across something the other day written by Maya Angelou, it's something I had lost touch with, and it's really important to me. I keep it with me now all the time in my purse. And she said one time, I can be changed by what happens to me, but I refuse to be reduced by it.
Right.
And I think that falls in line with the message that you're giving. I really appreciate you bringing that up.
And another thing that I would like to mention, so many have offered and had pointed out what can be done for us, when we look at the mind-body connection that we can use so powerfully, and as a hypnotist, I've done that in the past for myself as well as with my clients, it is also something that I have found to be very, very helpful when it comes to pain, when it comes to preparation for surgery, when it comes to post-surgery work that will help to reduce the amount of medications we take, that will help to heal faster. All my doctors that have worked with me have been very surprised. Throughout radiation treatments, my skin didn't do any big thing. It was rather the opposite, that the doctor at some point came and said, we don't know exactly why your skin is not reacting, which had a lot to do with the visualizations I used for myself. So there is an enormous amount of very powerful thoughts, I want to say, at our fingertips when we know how to use them. And that's one of the things that I would encourage people, and not just people, women as well as men, who are dealing with whatever kind of diagnosis, to maybe even put on the radar that, yes, we can do some of the work through the nutritions and through others, but there is also the power of our mind, the power of our visualizations, where we can change situations within our own body by knowing what it is that we need to do. And one of the things that I offer is teaching it so that those who are interested in it can use it themselves throughout their treatment and afterwards to empower themselves. And it's easy to do even over the phone. So
thank you so much for the call. That's some really powerful stuff. And I'm really glad you hung in there and waited and came on the air. Thank you very much. Jennifer, we have just we have about 4 minutes, well, not even quite 4 minutes left, and so I just want to give you each a minute to say anything you'd like, really, along the lines of someone who's just starting this journey. You know, what would your advice to them be?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I was actually thinking of sharing a poem. Could I share a poem with you instead that I wrote at the beginning of my journey? I'm just leave it at that and say goodnight. And
sure.
And also, I want to wish all your callers the very best. And Jamie, I want to thank you so much for sharing. And I wish you the absolute best on your journey. Thanks. I didn't quite hear that. The connection was weird. So I wrote this poem very early on in my journey with cancer. It's called Cancer Doesn't Lie. Cancer doesn't lie about being broken, promises, betrayal and all, the hurt and sorrow of not seeing and being seen, years upon years of frustration and tears bottled inside, trying to hide. No, cancer doesn't lie about the damage all that does and the rampage that is, was, when we compromise our heart dreams for an idea that is not ours and never was. No, cancer doesn't lie to the body, mind, psyche, spirit. It lies in wait until some tumor hears it and awakes to the trueness and truthfulness of who we are and what we are destined for, so much more than what has been. No, cancer doesn't lie to anyone. It is too kind for that.
Wow, thank you very much for sharing that. Jamie?
That was amazing. I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And I wish you well in your journey as well. And it's like one of the callers said, it doesn't end. You know, I had to come to terms a long time ago with what my reality is, and the reality is I have cancer, and whether it's in remission right now or whether it decides to rear its ugly head and come back, I'll take it on another round, 2, 3, 4, whatever it takes, until it's tired of fighting, because I won't give up. I can't afford to. But I would like to say that for anybody that's starting, just found out they were diagnosed or starting you on a cancer journey, or if you just have questions about the kind of care that you're getting and you're not happy with it, empower yourself. Be vigilant about your own health care. Nobody's going to do it for you. Ask for a second opinion. Seek it out. I would like, if I can, to leave a phone number, one of the most important phone calls I ever made. I wouldn't be here.
Be quick. We have 7 seconds.
1-800-333-CTCA. The most important call you'll ever make.
1-800-333-CTCA. Is that right?
Absolutely.
Oh, Jamie, thank you so much. And Jennifer, if you're still there, I think you're still there. Thank you both so much for making this so far absolutely the most incredible show that we have ever done. And probably will remain so. Thank you both, and I wish you both the very best on your journeys. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Anne.
That was Monday Night Radio with Jennifer and Jamie, and thank you ever so much for tuning in and listening to us, and give us a follow at blogtalkradio.com, Monday Night Radio, if you like the show. Thank you, and talk to you next week.